Hey, by the way, I'm 100% pro-choice before conception. Before conception. At conception, that's another person's body. That's no longer just the woman's body. That is also the baby's body with inside her. And no one seems to want to focus on that because that's the inconvenient truth that defeats the abortion narrative.
Hi everyone, this is Veronica Kirilenko of the New American Magazine. Less than a year after the Supreme Court voted to overturn Roe v. Wade and end federal protections for abortions, the High Court is set to decide the case on the use of mifepristone, a drug commonly used to terminate pregnancies. Today I'm joined by Susan Swift, a pro-life attorney with America's first pro-life organization, Right to Life League. Susan, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Veronica. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, Susan. So before we dive into the legal battle over mifepristone, let's talk about the physical aspect of chemical abortion so everyone has a solid understanding of what it actually is. We hear that mifepristone, along with its companion, misoprostol, is considered the golden standard of care for abortions. So how does this duo work?
Well, mifepristone is a chemical. It's also known as RU486. It was a French drug that the Clinton administration brought to America in combination in a handshake deal with the Population Council, the Rockefeller Population Council. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right? That's how they brought it in. And the Clinton administration put pressure on the FDA back in 2000 to let RU486, mifepristone, into the country. So it was approved as a drug through the FDA. What it does is it stops the naturally occurring hormone, progesterone, which a woman's body makes when she's pregnant. And that's what maintains your pregnancy. It basically keeps the uterine lining and the placenta and everything functioning so that the baby can continue to grow and get nourishment. And what mifepristone does is it switches off that hormone, progesterone, and starves the baby to death. That's what happens.
When RU486 blocks progesterone, the lining of the mother's uterus breaks down, cutting off blood and nourishment to the baby, who then dies inside the mother's womb.
So in the first pill you take, mifepristone, you take that for 2 days, you take it once, and then 2 days later, you take a second pill, which is misoprostol, and that induces uterine contractions. It basically, premature labor, right? It tells your body now to expel the dead or dying baby. And so what happens in a chemical abortion, the woman slowly starves her baby to death and then aborts the baby, you know, it expels it sometimes into the toilet, because that's the standard of what's happening now.
RU-46 and misoprostol together cause severe cramping, contractions, and often heavy bleeding to force the dead baby out of the woman's uterus. The process can be very intense and painful, and the bleeding and contractions can last from a few hours to several days. While she could lose her baby any time and anywhere during this process, the woman will often sit on a toilet as she prepares to expel the child, which she will then flush.
Since 2000, at least in 2000, originally the FDA had a lot of, it's called risk evaluation mitigation strategies, REMS. And those are put in place to protect the health of people who are taking drugs, right? Like the mothers. Those REMS, the risk evaluation mitigation strategies, have been lowered to the point now under the Biden administration that they're pretty much non-existent. And that's why mifepristone is the majority of all abortions right now. The Guttmacher Institute has a study that is, as of 2020, it makes up more than 54% of all abortions. And it used to be under stricter controls under these REMS, at least you had to go in to a doctor and you'd have to physically date the pregnancy using ultrasound to make sure that the woman was only 7 weeks or 8 weeks or 10 weeks along. That was the first thing, is because sometimes women don't know exactly how far along they are pregnant. Maybe they think they're only, 8 weeks, but really they're 12 or 14. And so for the sake of her health, because we know what the drug does, it starves the baby to death. But for the sake of the woman's health, this isn't safe past a certain point.
Well, this is interesting because the top HHS officials and then, of course, Danco Laboratories, the producer of the manufacturer of the drug, and the legacy media are repeating this usual mantra that the drug is safe and effective. You know, the CNN, for example, posted an analysis saying that mifepristone is even safer than penicillin. So what's your take on this narrative? What are the common side effects of the drug?
Sure.
For mother, I mean, of course, because yes, clearly for baby, it kills it.
It's 100% fatal for the babies and for women. And this is what the interesting sleight of hand that has been going on since I guess even Roe versus Wade and when mifepristone became available. There is no agency that is collecting data. This is on purpose. This is a way of masking data and covering it up. But the FDA itself on its website will admit that 28 women have died in association with taking mifepristone. Okay, so we know that, and it also lists the side effects, including hemorrhaging, sepsis, which is a blood infection. You can have the hemorrhaging can continue to the point where you need another surgical procedure to stop it. So there are serious side effects associated with mifepristone, but it's not being reported because no state gathers the information, and the FDA, the HHS, they're not requiring any doctors to report it. And so what happens is because the abortion lobby, I call it the abortion cartel, is so powerful, they cover up this data by saying, well, it's privacy. California doesn't even collect data about abortion. So you cannot, there are many states that you cannot even get rates of how many people are having abortions because that's considered private information. I'm not talking about individuals, by the way. I'm talking about, out of, 1,000 people, how many, it's data, just raw data. They won't even give us that. But we know that there are serious side effects. In fact, the Right to Life League has created a website called abortionpillinjury.com, with the idea of we need to inform women, especially what the risks are to them. Again, it's not focused on the risk to the baby. We know what the point of taking the drug is to kill the baby. So what is it about, the risks for the woman? And that's what we do at abortionpillinjury.com. We want to get outside of the bubble and explain to women that there are some serious risks, including death, that can result in association with taking the abortion pill.
And then there are psychological issues that women often have after having an abortion, chemical abortion included.
Yeah. We have a lot of anecdotal information that suggests that many women have just remorse, great guilt and remorse, and feel terrible about it for decades later. And that's another thing that the abortion cartel wants to push. That's why they're saying, oh, it's as safe as Tylenol and it's no big deal. Because again, they're dehumanizing the individual. They're dehumanizing that baby. They want to deny that there is no baby. That's why they refer to it as product of conception, mm-hmm. or, a pregnancy tissue, fetus. They don't want to say that it's a human baby. They don't want to acknowledge that there is a separate body. That's the chant. My body, my choice. Hey, by the way, I'm 100% pro-choice before conception. Before conception. At conception, that's another person's body. That's no longer just the woman's body. That is also the baby's body with inside her. And no one seems to want to focus on that because that's the inconvenient truth that defeats the abortion narrative.
Let's talk about the litigation, because the litigation over the FDA's approval of mifepristone is really complicated and made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. Would you please sort out this legal battle for us? What is it all about?
Sure. It started in Texas in a district court. It's a federal court. It's a district court. And so Aplog and pro-life doctors, these are OBGYN who are pro-life, brought the case and claimed, and this is very important because the mainstream media, I call it the make-believe media, because they make up the news and then they make you believe it. So the make-believe media will tell you, oh, These doctors and OBGYNs, they're bringing this case 23 years too late. What are they doing? How come they didn't complain? Here's the fact. They did. They complained in 2000 to the FDA, and the FDA stonewalled them for like 4,000 days, 4,900 days. They kept stonewalling it because the FDA is supposed to answer a petition within 180 days. It never did. It just kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And finally, these plaintiffs finally said, that's enough. And we are now suing the FDA because you're for failure to even listen to our claim here. So that's mm-hmm. the first thing. The second thing that happened is that this judge, district court judge in Texas, federal district court, looked at the materials and said, okay, based on all of the facts that are before me and based on the law, I am going to enjoin, I'm going to put a stay on all on the FDA. Basically, mm-hmm. You can't authorize the use of mifepristone. Here's why. Because you, the FDA, you did not follow your own rules that are set up to protect the public. And so in essence, what this is look, this is judicial oversight of the executive branch that has run amok, that has not followed its own procedural rules that are put in place for all kinds of different drugs. I think everybody should want that. We should absolutely make sure that the FDA observes its own protocols so that we know that whatever they do authorize is safe. They didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting because the DOJ and the pharmaceutical executive said that the courts should not be deciding on the matters of science.
Right.
And at the same time, 45% of the FDA comes from the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting, right?
Yes, there's a lot of money to be made because mifepristone, again, it is more than 54% of all abortions right now, probably a lot more than that. And so there's a lot of money involved. But you have to focus on what this really is. This is the judicial branch supervising the executive branch saying, now, wait a minute, you didn't follow your own rules. Therefore, this drug is no longer valid because you never followed your rules. So that's what happened at the district court. And then, the FDA appealed it and said, oh, no, this is not fair. Right. So they appealed it to the Fifth Circuit, and a panel of three judges at the Fifth Circuit looked at it and said, and pardon the pun, they split the baby. They said, we're going to allow mifepristone to continue to be, sold, but we are going to roll back the restrictions on it. The restrictions right now at 2023 are almost nil. There's nothing. It just says you don't have to date the pregnancy anymore with an ultrasound. You can get it by a telehealth medicine appointment, and you can receive it through the mail. That's because under the Biden administration in 2021, they started loosening the REMS, the risk evaluation mitigation strategies. So the Fifth Circuit looked at this and said, we're going to at least roll back the regulations, the REMS. We're going to roll back to pre-2016. So we're going to require the in-person. We're going to also say, look, you can't take this medication past 7 weeks. As opposed to 10 weeks or 12 weeks. So they've rolled it back. They've kind of gone halfway. And they said, well, we're partially upholding the lower court's ruling, but we're going to allow this to continue under the pre-2016 regulations at the FDA. And of course, then the plaintiffs appealed that. And I think also the FDA also appealed to the Supreme Court, because in another district, in the D.C. court, the D.C. district, a lower court judge had said in a very, and this ruling was also designed to thwart the district court in Texas. It came out and said, well, we need to maintain the status quo on mifepristone. So we have the district court saying in D.C. saying status quo, Texas district court saying, ban it altogether. And so those two were competing. Fifth Circuit says, well, we're gonna allow it up to 2016 restrictions, and that'll be 7 weeks, no mail order. You have to go in person, those things. So those are in place, and so now the whole matter has been appealed up to the Supreme Court. And what the Justice Alito, he's the judge that oversees the Fifth Circuit, and he allowed for a temporary stay on the Fifth Circuit's partial ban to say, look, we're going to just put everything on hold so that it gives both sides the ability to submit papers to us and explain to us why we should, support the district court or why we should support the Fifth Circuit. What is going on? Please send us documents, so that briefs, so that we can read it. And he's just extended that through Friday. So that will give the court the time to review these pleadings, these documents that both sides have submitted.
What's your prognosis, Susan, for tomorrow's decision? Do you have any?
Well, I'm biased. I wish very much that From a legal standpoint, I very much support the three-part system that we have, a judicial branch, an executive branch, and a legislative branch. It has to be balanced. And if indeed the FDA has violated its own rules, which I read the decision, it sure did, you can't allow that. And just think about it this way. If this were, say, a different drug, I don't know, something comes to mind, but if this were a new medication for migraine medicine or something like that, right? And the FDA ignored its own rulings and admits that 28 people have died from this new migraine medicine and that there are these terrible side effects, but they just fast-tracked it because the drug companies are pressuring them because it's all about the money, I would very much expect a judicial branch to look at that and say, wait, you're not following your own rules, which are designed to protect the people and the public. So I would want them to roll that back. And yes, and tell the FDA what essentially is going to happen if this partial stay is upheld, or even if the full stay, partial ban is upheld, if the Fifth Circuit ban is upheld, or if the district court, the Texas district court, is upheld in full, banning the use of mifepristone, well, what they're going to do, the drug manufacturers are simply going to go right back to the FDA. And of course, the ideologues in the FDA will just finally say, all right, fine, we'll go right back through the procedure and we will do the procedure the way that we should have in the first place. And we'll make, I believe they'll manufacture the data to make sure it's safe. But that's what they'll be at least forced to do. So it'll at least have to go through the regulatory process, which it should have in the first place. So I hope that the Supreme Court upholds it, but I don't know. I have not read the briefs that are before it. Of course, There is the other side, the abortion cartel side, and the drug manufacturers are going to complain that they're losing all kinds of money because it totally affects their business. And of course, the pro-abortion side are going to be saying, well, you're jeopardizing women's health. How are you doing that? Well, because you're forcing women to stay pregnant. No, you're not. Nobody is forcing a woman to get pregnant.
This is very interesting. I think it's very significant because one of the conclusions made by the central conclusion made by the Texas federal judge is that, like you said, the FDA overstepped its authority when it approved mifepristone. And specifically, the judge said that the agency employed a specialized review process intended for drugs that treat serious or life-threatening illness. And right. You don't have to be a lawyer or a doctor to know that pregnancy is not an illness, and clearly the drug that mifepristone provides no meaningful therapeutic benefits to women who use it to terminate the pregnancy. So what does it say about the worldview of the people who work at the FDA? Seriously.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. Pregnancy is a natural function of a woman's body. But we're in a world right now that can't even define what a woman is, right? We're saying that trans women are women and all of that nonsense. We have a new Supreme Court Justice, Ketanji Brown, who will not define what a woman is because she's not a biologist. So we have an entire section of our country that is denying reality, denying biology. Of course, pregnancy is not, it is not a serious illness. But you see, it's been sold that way for at least 50 years. That was Alan Guttmacher of the Guttmacher Institute. He came up with the notion that abortion is healthcare. That you'll see, hear that over and over again. That's the mantra. And that is a like an Orwellian or Marxist talking point, because it makes pregnancy sound like it's an illness. It is not. It is something that is totally natural. That's what a woman's body is designed to do. And if left alone, 99.9% of the time, you have a healthy baby and everything's fine. And what they're relying on, they always turn to this, which is less than 2% of, at least according to the data that they allow us to see. Again, there's a blackout on a lot of data. But from what we do know, when you're talking about pregnancy that is at an actual risk to the health of the mother, not the mental health, but the physical health, that's less than 2% of all abortions. That's ectopic pregnancies or perhaps preeclampsia or perhaps high blood pressure or some other anomaly that is a physical threat to the woman. That is less than 2% of all of the cases. So we know that 98% of the cases, the pregnancy is just fine. And we also know that every state in the union, everywhere, makes exceptions for the health of the mother, even Texas and Louisiana and Florida, because we all want to save life. And here's the other fact, which is, and every doctor knows this, that if you have a pregnant woman who is in, you know, in jeopardy, an ectopic pregnancy, what you're doing is you can triage. You have two patients. You have the woman and then you have the baby. And in most cases, you can very easily deliver the woman quickly, premature delivery, and save the baby as well. Sometimes the baby might not be saved. Maybe if it's under 24 weeks or 17 weeks, whatever it is, or if it's an ectopic pregnancy, yes, it will not survive. But those are rare. And what you do is you can deliver the woman in minutes. You don't have to wait, like the abortion industry will tell you, is wait for days for a second or third trimester abortion. That requires inserting laminaria into to soften the cervix and to open up the cervix so that then they can get in there and tear the baby into pieces and suck it out into a sink. That delays treatment for days. But you see, that's not what the convenient truth is. They don't want you to know that delivery can happen in moments for a second or a third trimester. And even in the cases of ectopic pregnancy, that ectopic pregnancy can be removed safely and quickly and save the woman's life. So there is never a need for an abortion.
True. Susan, another question. You know, there are reports suggesting that even if mifepristone is taken out of the picture, it would not end chemical abortions, and that hospitals would, for example, use only the second drug, misoprostol, to terminate pregnancies, which is less effective in killing babies on its own, but has more acute side effects. Are you concerned that it would result in an maybe increased rate of injuries among mothers?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it what it does is it creates uterine contractions. So it basically brings on early labor and delivery, right? So what it's going to do is, if they're just going to go with misoprostol, you're going to have babies born alive. That's what's going to happen. You're going to have babies born alive that are premature, maybe at, 13, 14, 17, 20 weeks, whatever, because we know from, I think there was a Daily Mail, UK Daily Mail story of a woman who was 30 weeks pregnant. Her doctor gave her mifepristone, and she thought she was a lot earlier along. I don't know why the doctor did this, but she delivered a baby boy born at 30 weeks pregnancy. He lived for 4 days and then died because she'd taken mifepristone. So if you're going to take misoprostol on top of that and just get rid of the mifepristone, you won't starve the baby to death. That's what mifepristone does. Instead of starving the baby to death, you're just going to put these women into premature labor. And so you're going to have babies born alive. And that's that, I mean,
and yet this is what the hospitals and clinics and doctors are willing to do.
Well,
to young,
yeah, I
young
guess
women
so.
who are desperate.
And this is the craziness of it. Again, pregnancy is not a life-threatening condition. That is a lie that's been perpetrated by the Guttmacher Institute in association with his buddy Margaret Sanger, who started the whole idea of, the eugenics of abortion. That's what she was really big into. So this is a lie that's being perpetrated on two or three generations of women, that somehow pregnancy is a risk to your health, and it is not. It is natural, and they've been now selling drugs to interfere with the natural hormonal process. It's kind of like out here in California, people are so into organic food and everything. We have to have, range-free chickens and no hormones in our meat and everything. And yet you're telling generations of women to take a pill that interrupts their natural hormones. It doesn't make any sense.
Susan, you do a very important work at Right to Life League. Please tell us what's the best way to support you.
Oh, well, thank you. The Right to Life League is America's first pro-life organization. We were founded in 1967. We educate on the truth of what abortion is, which is the killing of babies in the womb. We advocate against bad abortion expansion laws. And we also, we educate, you know, and reach out in media. We also help clinics that are in California, pro-life clinics and centers and maternity homes with different training programs so that they have some of the training that they need to do a better job and hopefully keep their doors open. So that's what we do. And you can visit our website at righttolifeleague.org, righttolifeleague.org. And if you want to, you can hit the donate button, which would really help us out. And you can give whatever you think would help, because we'll take anything, because it's just us out here.
Susan, and what's the best way to follow you?
Well, the Right to Life League is on, you know, social media and things. Myself personally, I'm on Facebook and in different places under Real Susan Swift, Real Susan Swift. So at, you know, at Real Susan Swift on Facebook or Twitter or wherever else. That's my, you know, my personal take on different things that include abortion, but other issues as well.
Thank you so much for your time today. That was Susan Swift, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronica Kirilenko of the New American Magazine.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.